The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard on corners in town, like a cancer that's silently spreading. There's an unspoken fear, we're on our way down. We must take America back, Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C., before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. We must take America back, as liberty weeps, our forefathers spin in their graves. Pray God will bless some way out of this mess. We must take America back.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the National Intel Report. I'm your host, John Stadtmiller, with you on this Thursday, 15th day of August 2019. If it gets any hotter down here in Texas, you know, somebody once told me when I first came to Texas, said, oh, there's a big Christian revival going on down here. And I said, really? Well, that's cool. Well, after being down here in Texas for 20 plus years, I understand now why that's going on. It's just a little reminder that a summer in Texas is tantamount to standing at the gates of hell by way of heat. My goodness. It's only, what, 105 out there today? But it's a dry heat. My car, Mike, it's so hot out there, and the oxygen molecules are spread so far apart, my unturboed four-cylinder in my car is acting more like a turbo. You press the gas down, it's trying to suck air, and it's going, where is it? Where is it? And I've got a little lag in my acceleration because it's so damn hot down here. You know, I often wondered, you get better gas mileage when the air is dense. You ever notice that in the wintertime, folks? And, you know, for you people that it gets down to below 32 degrees for like 8 months of the year. Doesn't your car run better in cold, dense air? Which led me to think, if that's the case, and you could get better gas mileage with cool or cold air, why don't they siphon a little bit off of that off the air conditioner? Because that's exactly the time that you need it, is when the air is so hot. If you're using the air conditioner, obviously it's uncomfortable. So, you know, I just share and share alike. Beads of sweat off of your brow. Car enjoys it. Doesn't have to work as hard. It's got more power. It's just one of those fleeting thoughts that hit me on the way into the office today. Yeah, folks. Mikey, I didn't have time to do it. Dig me up the Israeli story. The wing nuts that want to go to Israel. And we'll certainly get around that. First thing I want to cover, though. Do we know the name of the guy that's the shooter? I know they don't like to mention their names because they feel if they mention it more than once or twice that somehow it's, I don't know, the perp is on his way to a movie or a book deal. I don't know. But as it turns out, this gunman, which really, not much of a gunman really, because he ended up surrendering. And I'm thinking about this and I'm going, wait a minute. Who is or who at that point in time before he surrendered, I'm thinking, who was this guy in past tense? But hey, he threw up his hands and they didn't shoot him, which is a good thing. But who was this guy? Well, evidently, he's got priors the length of your longest leg. Okay? And liberal prosecutors sought to dismiss all sorts of charges against this guy. Now, okay, You know, there is talk of letting nonviolent criminals out of jail, but this guy was violent. He was violent. So what do? Well, we just don't prosecute the guy. Okay. Well, if you want to look at justice through the lens of liberals, well, then there's no sin that's too egregious that can't be forgiven. You know, it was a trade-out. Criminals knew this. It's a trade-out. I'm going to do a criminal act. If I get caught, well, I guess I'm going to have to do some jail time. They already knew the score. But now we got bleeding heart people that, well, they just want to undo the entire thing. Well, this poor person. Much like they did with the babies and the bust and down in Mississippi with the illegals. What was the first thing that they went to? Oh, the poor babies. And I was a little hot under the collar about that. I was upset and people heard what I had to say. And I went surfing around the web looking for news, and every once in a while I would see writers of articles saying the same thing. Of course, after the fact. After I made that statement on air. You know, if you're a run-of-the-mill criminal from any town, USA, you know, what's going to be next on the communist agenda? Well, you can't arrest this boy from the hood for dealing drugs. And, you know, because he's got a family, if you put him in prison, what about his poor children? You see the correlation here that people that make decisions that, well, where's the ultimate responsibility? Society? The inability for us to love? You know, I'm a forgive and forget guy, but, you know, hey, first off, if you want to be forgiven, then you're asking for forgiveness. Why are you asking for forgiveness? Because you're sorry you did the crime, or you're sorry you got caught? Or you're sorry you can't use the assets in today's society to obfuscate and politicize the event to the point that people are scratching their head going, oh, God, just cut him some slack and let him go. Well, sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. And this that I'm about to cover for you, ladies and gentlemen, is really the solution to the problem we have out there with so many police officers because of fear for their life on their job or just following protocol that somehow it's been amped up to, I don't know, KGB-style tactics. I can't think of another phrase or other words to describe it. Well, somebody's gone to jail. And some lawyers are losing their licenses. Say it isn't so. Court suspends two prosecutors lifting their law licenses. Why? Because the prosecution was rigging the case and covering up brutal police beating. Whoa. Say it isn't so, Joe. That never happens in America. Well, that must be a one-off. The police are our heroes, and we'd never do anything to harm the public. Ben Keller thinks otherwise. Phony charges against a brutality victim and omissions about a cop who beat a handcuffed man led to their suspensions. The Missouri Supreme Court unanimously suspended the law license of two prosecutors in St. Louis on Tuesday for covering for a detective who beat a handcuffed suspect, jamming a gun in his mouth, and beating him with a chair in 2014. Mike, did you hear about that class they've got in police academies now on chair-beating suspects? You got to get an A in that to get a badge. The law licenses of Catherine Ann Deerdorf and Ambry Nicole Schusler were suspended for their dishonesty and concealment of an assault by a St. Louis detective, Thomas A. Carroll. Now, this one Thomas A. Carroll was later sentenced to 52 months in a federal prison for beating a 41-year-old Michael Waller, who was handcuffed. Now, before I go any further here, did you notice he got 52 months in a federal prison? Why the hell didn't he get 52 months in a state prison in Missouri where the crime took place? Why do we have the federales all over everything? It's as if we have no law or no law books in any states. Or that the Fed is so much better at leveling charges and getting their guy. Well, that opens up another can of worms and I won't go down at this point. But this guy became enraged on July 22nd of 2014 after Waller was caught in a possession of a credit card stolen from his daughter's car a few days before her wedding. Oh, God. Waller denied breaking into her car and says he found the card, which he very well might have, or he might have stolen it out of his daughter's car, but that's neither here nor there, folks. It's how these people with badges are acting. U.S. District Court Henry Autry rejected Carroll's insistent claim that he never put a gun in Walter's mouth. Waller is his name. Let me get that right. Nor seriously hurt him the night of his arrest. Well, Waller suffered chipped teeth, severely bruised ribs, a concussion, and a bloodied lip. Pretty much what you get off of a gun being shoved in your mouth and rattled around and being beat with chairs. But I'm just saying. However, when Waller complained to a police lieutenant about what happened after Carroll left, well, not to be outdone by his underlings, the lieutenant gave him a black eye. I'm not making this up, folks, and it really isn't funny, but this is how ludicrous this stuff is getting. Finally, somebody's looking at this and going, you know what? The actions of the police on the street, they've got to be professional. There's got to be policy standards that they don't wander off and color outside those lines, come up with their own creative ideas like planting evidence or turning off my body cam so I can go rough somebody up and beat the crap out of them while they're handcuffed. Folks, you ever been handcuffed? It's real hard to hurt somebody if you're handcuffed, especially if you're on the ground, whether you're face up or face down. Anyhow, when he complained to a police lieutenant thinking, hey, you know what, best case scenario, at least if somebody in the echelon knows that this is going on, maybe they'll just drop a quiet word, hey, don't beat this guy up anymore. No, he gets a pop in the eye from the lieutenant. However, the lieutenant was never charged or disciplined after Waller was unable to pick him out of a lineup. Carroll, along with his supervisor, refused to allow Waller to get a lawyer or go to the hospital and threatened to plant drugs and a gun on him or just kill him if he told anyone what happened. No police employees ever admitted to hearing or seeing the beating, including two who demanded immunity from prosecution, which was granted. Why did they need immunity if they didn't hear or see anything? Now that your guess is as good as mine. Deardorff was attending a St. Louis Cardinals baseball game with another prosecutor, Bliss Worrell, and a summer intern when she received a call from Carroll saying Waller had broken into his daughter's car and stolen his credit card. Now Deardorff and the intern were in the office the next morning when Worrell entered and told them what happened. Tom beat up that guy, Worrell said, according to the court documents. In a subsequent text, Worrell said she couldn't have mentioned the assault in front of the new co-worker. Worrell texted, ha, I realize we shouldn't have been talking about Tom beating somebody up in front of another co-worker. That behavior is not on her, true public servant. Later the same day, Worrell was speaking to Carroll on the phone about the assault when she walked into the office with Schussler and Deardorff. Waller placed Detective Carroll on speakerphone as he described brutality beating Waller over a credit card. Carroll described punching Waller's face, kicking him, putting a gun in his mouth, and hitting him in the back with a chair before making what the court describes as a racist and homophobic comment. Jeez. Even though Worrell was not assigned to the Warren office, she went there later in the afternoon to issue charges against Waller, including a phony charge of felony fleeing, to explain why the suspect was injured. This is according to the Kansas City Star. Dierdorf and Schuessler later discussed the phony charge. "We could get in trouble just for knowing this," Schuessler said to Dierdorf. Initially, Schuessler was hesitant to report the fake charges because she had been roommates with Dierdorf, but she went to a supervisor with another prosecutor. Supervisors then called in Dierdorf to discuss the incident. That's when she admitted to knowing Carol had beaten Waller, the cop himself. Okay, Dierdorf didn't tell the supervisors that Worrell told her about the beating or that she knew about the assault before the fake charges. Schuessler told supervisors she'd overheard a conversation about the beating, but didn't say that she heard Carol describing it on speakerphone. Now, internal affairs, you know, those guys that all the cops hate because, well, IA is just the antithesis to good cops, don't you know? Well, God. During criminal investigations, Dierdorf and Schuessler exhibited a pattern of dishonesty, according to the court opinion. Detective Carroll was later pleaded guilty to a felony crime of deprivation of civil rights under the color of law. Ah, there's the feds. Okay. Felony crime of deprivation of civil rights. I guess states can't fly under that flag, only the Fed can. Even though both entities have been corporatized and, well, it's all in the money courts. If you don't understand that statement, back up to about a year, 5 years in the archives, catch up. Worrell pleaded guilty to the charge of misprison of a felony. According to the court decision, Schuessler can reapply to practice law in 2 years. Dierdorf will be eligible to reapply to practice law in 3 years. Why? They got caught covering up. Why should they just have their licenses temporarily suspended? Why? Hell, there's some states out there you get caught drinking and driving or whatever. Hell, they'll suspend your license for a year or two. The only good thing I can say about this whole issue is the court had to look at the evidence, and rather than aiding and abetting in crime, not just the officer beating up the suspect, but the prosecutors covering for the dirty cop. Oh, and the lieutenant? Well, he's nowhere to be seen or heard. He's not on administrative leave. He's just not granting any interviews. Gee, I wonder why. I just want to know one thing. Was it a left hook or a jab or a straight punch for that black eye, lieutenant? Now, it's... I understand a lot of people are fed up with the criminals. I get that. We all are. But here's the problem. It's getting harder and harder to discover what's illegal and what's not illegal. I heard in New Jersey, Mike, everything's legal as long as you don't get caught. I've heard that. All right. Well, here is the story of the day. It's all over the media, but I'm going to bring a little different angle to this one. We'll do that when we get back.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets, even with a growing audience every day. RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Well, it's all right, riding around in the breeze. Well, it's all right, if you live the life you please. Well, it's all right.
Folks, I remember the day that I woke up, beautiful spring morning in Michigan, just waking up, the windows were open and the curtains were blowing and there was a smell of spring in the air, and my first thought that hit my head, wow, what a wonderful day. I wonder what I'm going to do today. And then reality set in. And I've been on that path all of these years. Well, everybody seemed to miss this point. Now, we've got these Democrat leaders that criticized the decision by Netanyahu to ban U.S. Congresswoman. And we're talking about Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar, Democrat out of Michigan and Democrat out of Minnesota. Now, these people are not my favorite people. My question is who in the hell voted them into the U.S. Congress? But having said that, and they are there and I'm here, political Democratic leaders and pro-Israel organizations from AIPAC to J Street criticized on Thursday Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's decision to ban Reps Omar and Tlaib from entering the country. Now, AIPAC, the largest pro-Israel group in the U.S., released a rare statement with implied criticism on the decision and voicing support to allow the two in Israel. We disagree with Reps Omar and Tlaib's support for the anti-Israel, anti-peace BDS movement. Now, let me stop and explain what's going on here, folks. I was watching the news today. They're all but screeching, pleading into the cameras. Oh, my God, this anti-Semitism. Why the reaction like that? Because it's hitting Israel right where it hurts, and they're lying little butts. That's why. Now, AIPAC put out a tweet that said that we disagree with Reps Omar and Tlaib's support for the anti-Israel, anti-peace BDS movement, along with Representative Tlaib's calls for a one-state solution. Wow. The organization tweeted, "We also believe every member of Congress should be able to visit and experience our democratic ally, Israel, firsthand." Now, AIPAC's tweet was surprising, given that Omar attacked the organization with anti-Semitic tropes in the past, and because the group's policy not to publicly criticize Israel. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi? That old dingbat still alive? It must have been a dream. I heard she died last night. Must have been. Check with Snopes. Oh, gosh. She said in a statement that she is sad and deeply disappointed by the decision to reverse Israel's original position to allow the two to enter. Does this mean that Nancy Pelosi is anti-Semitic? Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer referred to Trump's tweet, who suggested that allowing the two in would be a show of weakness, and wrote, "Denying entry to the members of the United States Congress is a sign of weakness, not strength. It will only hurt the U.S.-Israeli relationship and support for Israel in America." Trust me, Donnie, if the truth was known about Israel and Zionism in this country, there probably wouldn't be one person in this country that you couldn't then describe as being anti-Israel. Uh-oh. Did I just make a racist and homophobic remark? No, I was just anti-Semitic. Now, Schumer went on to say that no democratic society should fear an open debate. Many strong supporters of Israel will be deeply disappointed in this decision, which the Israeli government should reverse. Everybody's chiming in on this one. House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer sharply criticized the decision to ban the two and called it outrageous regardless of their itinerary or their views. Now, folks, the itinerary wasn't to go visit Israel. The itinerary was to go visit Palestine. Okay, keep that planted in your head for a moment. He voiced disappointment from Netanyahu and the ambassador to the U.S., Ron Dermer's actions. And revealed in a statement that he tried to convince the prime minister to change his mind, to no avail. "This action is contrary to the statement and assurances to me by Israel's ambassador to the United States that out of respect for the U.S. Congress and a great alliance between Israel and America that nobody can figure out why, but I digress, we would not deny entry to any member of Congress into Israel," Hoyer wrote. "That representation was not true." He went on to say, "The action the Israeli government has taken is wrong. I urge Prime Minister Netanyahu, when I spoke to him yesterday, to allow Representative Tlaib and Representative Omar's visit to go forward. Israel is a strong and a resilient nation. It's a robust democracy with a wide divergence of views and opinions, as in the United States. This action reflects weakness, not strength. It also reflects something else that nobody... and I mean nobody is talking about." We'll take your calls as well, 800-313-9443. We'll be back right after this.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
It's happening, ladies and gentlemen. We here at RBN are working with Front Sight Firearms Training Institute to bring our audience the best in combat, tactical, and defensive firearms training. Whether you're a private citizen who is new to firearms, or you have a concealed weapon permit, and want a level of training that surpasses what you've received from your local gun range, Front Sight provides priceless education and skills taught by seasoned law enforcement, military, and private citizen instructors to levels that far exceed law enforcement and military standard. With nearly a million responsible citizens trained from every town, city, and state from across the United States, Front Sight has bolstered the Patriot movement to a whole new level. Contact Dan Sutterfield by phone at 573-762-2356 or 573-465-2356 or shoot him an email at domedan, D-O-M-E-D-A-N, at hotmail.com. This is a limited time opportunity. Don't miss it.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you some from Amazon.com. It really does work like the review says it does. I cannot believe that after the first few days, I didn't feel as sluggish or clogged up. It has had a profound impact on my physical, emotional well-being. I'm skeptical as most people about products and their claims, and I never write reviews, but this is a wonderful product and I recommend it to everyone. Great product. It has brought my blood pressure from the mid-150s over the 80s to the mid-130s over mid-80s, along with diet and exercise in just the past couple of months. Excellent. Thank you, David. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Representative Elliot Engel, chairman of the House Committee on Foreign Affairs, released a statement in which he detailed his conversation with Dermer on Wednesday. It won't surprise anybody that I have disagreements with Representative Omar and Tlaib when it comes to Israel, Engel said. I probably wouldn't have planned the same trip they did, but as I said to Dermer yesterday, it's a mistake for the Israeli government to bar entry of members of Congress into Israel. Okay. Sounds reasonable so far, doesn't it? Okay. If Israel's government hopes to win the support of American lawmakers across the political spectrum, if Israel's government hopes to win the support of American lawmakers, they've got them blackmailed and held over the barrel. That's another thing the American public does not know, and they should, but be that as it may. Then this visit could have been an opportunity to share views and make a case for why American support for Israel is so important. Still trying to determine that, and when anybody asks that question, what are they accused of? Oh, you're just some kind of anti-Semite. Yeah, there's your answer. Instead, refusing entry to members of Congress looks like Israel's closing itself off to criticism and dialogue. Not the Israeli government, please. This decision will only strengthen the anti-Israel movement and arguments many of us find so troubling. Further politicize support for Israel and the United States and ultimately play right into the hands of Israel's enemies. Jeez. If my two colleagues had seen what I'd seen over the years, I believe they would have come away with valuable new perspectives. Now they won't have that opportunity, and it's a real shame. Even Elizabeth Warren has tweeted that Israel doesn't advance its case as a tolerant democracy or unwavering U.S. ally by barring elected members of Congress from visiting because of their political views. This would be a shameful, unprecedented move. I urge Israel's government to allow them to enter. Another presidential hopeful, The Burn. Yes, The Burn, Chief. I'm sorry. He tweeted on this one. Banning Congresswoman Omar Tlaib from entering Israel and Palestine is a sign of enormous disrespect to these elected leaders. Never mind the fact that nobody really respects them, but be that as it may. He says to the United States Congress and to the principles of democracy, the Israeli government should reverse this decision and allow them in. You see, they're barred. They should be allowed in. They're not allowed in. They shouldn't be barred. Hallie Sofer, executive director of the Jewish Democratic Council of America, released a statement and wrote that banning members of Congress from visiting Israel, where they can see facts on the ground with their own eyes, is counterproductive and plays into Trump's goal of politicizing support for Israel. They even went as far on Fox Business today to interview some clown I'd never seen before and hope I never see again, of saying that the Israelis are the ones that are running over the battlefields, collecting up the poor Syrians that got gassed. They just ran into another wall with the, oh, that's right, the white-helmeted ones over there that swore up and down that, well, it was Assad's people that were gassing fellow Syrians. Turned out to be totally bogus. Et al., so is this creature that was literally screeching into the camera. Oh, my God, they showed such determination and will by going hitting these poor Syrians. You know, you didn't want to talk about Israeli defense, and we got video. Filming 11. Of Israeli defense forces sitting there, laughing it up, yucking it up, shooting kids, blowing off legs, seeing how far they can flip them in the air, you know, that sorts of thing. You know, I mean, The American Jewish Committee, the AJC, CEO David Harris issued a statement in support of the two congresswomen's right to visit Israel. As long-time friends and supporters of Israel, American Jewish Committee has always believed that visiting Israel is essential to gaining better understanding of this dynamic country and the very real security challenges it faces. He added that while he understands the delegation was a mere propaganda exercise that aims to undermine the very legitimacy of the state of Israel, we don't need American Congress people to do that. Israel does that on a daily basis. For those that have the eyes to see it. However, Harris emphasized that the AJC believes that out of the two less than ideal options, neither of which was risk-free, Israel did not choose wisely by reversing its original decision. While we fully respect Israel's sovereign right to control entry into the country, a right that every nation employs, and while we're under no illusions about the implacably hostile views of Representative Omar and Tlaib on Israel-related issues, we nonetheless believe that the cost in the U.S. of barring the entry of two members of Congress may prove even higher than the alternative. And, oh, Marco Rubio. Is this guy still in the Senate? Oh, sorry. Who was the author of the anti-BDS bill that passed in the Senate, tweeted that I disagree 100% with Tlaib and Omar. However, denying them entry is a mistake. Being blocked is what they really hoped for all along in order to bolster their attacks against the Jewish state. I'm not going to go any further with this because it's all the same drivel. You know what the real problem here is? The plans of these two Congress critters was not to go visit Israel. The plan of these two Congress critters was to go visit Palestine. You starting to see the problem here? So who cares if two U.S. representatives want to take a plane and fly over to Israel? They do it all the time. What's the problem if a couple of Congress critters want to hop on a plane and fly over to Palestine? Oh, Oh, that's right, they can't. This is the obvious flaw in all of this fluff and this screeching today, is Israel denies 2 years. They weren't going to, they wanted to go to Palestine. Why weren't they able to get in Palestine? Because Israel is blocking anybody from going to Palestine. Just ask those people that tried to take ships in to relieve some of the stress and hunger and all the stuff that the Israeli Defense Forces were raining hell down on the Gaza Strip and whatever. You had people that wanted to go over there for themselves, go to Palestine, talk to the people. Well, who blocked them from entry? The Israeli government. What are they so afraid of? That if people learn the truth, that somehow that this is going to work against Israel? Duh. Let's reverse this.
6 million Jews were killed by the Nazis during World War II.
How many Palestinians have been killed? How many Palestinians have been displaced? Does this not speak volumes of who is running what and what Israel thinks it owns and what it doesn't? How can you deny entry into a sovereign country? How can you block fact finders and journalists and relief workers from going into Palestine? How can you do that? How? It's just, here it is in the glaring light of day, and not one of these clowns on television or one, not one writer, both alternative or in the Zionist own creation of media in this country, you know, the perception people, have brought out. I'm just wondering why. This just seems a little odd to me. Can't get up my caller screen. Who's on? Oh, okay. 800-313-9443. I heard the phone ringing. I'm just fascinated by this little oversight. They weren't going over to see Israel. All of our Congress critters and senators and all the donors and I mean it's a waiting list, folks, to don the little yarmulke and go over there and bow in front of the prayer wall. Hell, that's photo op gold right there. But evidently, something happened on the way to sanity. And this should be the story of the day, but it's not. But I'll make it a lead story. There's a guy that used to work for Google. He's now a whistleblower. He's gone public. And he says it's like a burden lifted off of my soul. Now, a Google insider who anonymously leaked internal documents to Project Veritas made the decision to go public in an on-the-record video interview, of which we're going to present to you. The insider, Zachary Voorhees, decided to go public after receiving a letter from Google, and after he says Google allegedly called the police to perform a wellness check on him. Say it isn't so. Mike, pot please.
I've been living with this like burden for 3 years, since 2016 when they started changing everything, and you know, and to have that burden lifted off of my soul is, I've never felt happier or, you know, more at peace with myself than I have like right now.
Now, what you're not able to see here is the friendly police showing up. And Zachary Voorhees he had to put up his hands and turn his back to the officers and walk slowly backwards, which means this is pretty much an arrest and harassment. Yeah, they're ordering them back
up. The police didn't announce themselves. I decided that I'm just not going to talk to them.
So, why are the police outside your home in San Francisco?
And so, what I did is I put out a dead man switch. People are like, well, you're brave. It's like when I'm coming and explaining what Google was doing, this is an act of atonement, okay, to make my conscience clear.
Not objective piece. They're not an objective source of information.
Which, by the way, what did it cost this young whistleblower? Oh, about $250,000 in salary. You need that much money to live in San Francisco.
They are a highly biased political machine that is bent on never letting somebody like Donald Trump come to power again.
The Google whistleblower has come out of the shadows, this time releasing a large cache of remarkable confidential Google documents that expose Google's political bias and a scary progressive social agenda.
My name is Zach Voorhees, and I was an employee at Google for 8 years. And the reason why I collected these documents was because I saw something dark and nefarious going on with the company. I felt that our entire election system was going to be compromised forever by this company that told the American public that it was not going to do any evil. And I saw that they were making really quick moves, not only in the documents, but also in the internal speeches that the executives were giving to the company, that they were intending to do that. They were intending to sculpt the information landscape so that they could create their own version of what was objectively true.
It was June 24th. Project Veritas released an investigation that included an interview in the shadows with Google insider Zach Voorhees. Within days, it seems, Google was on to him.
What happened since you and I last spoke?
There's a lot of stuff that happened since you and I last spoke. I went back to San Francisco, and I laid low. And then, out of the blue, I got a letter from Google indicating that they knew what I had done. And that letter contained several demands. Six of them, in fact, asking me whether I retained documents, asking me to list the people that I had given the documents to, and requesting access to all of the data, all of my personal data, my laptop, my backup hard drives, in order for them to come in and start scrubbing all of it.
So we have the letter in front of us, and I have a copy of it here. This letter does make a few demands. It asks you to cease and desist. It asks you to comply by a certain date, no later than Friday, July 26th. Did you?
I did. I did comply. And I complied honestly.
What did you do?
What I told Google is that, yes, I had retained some of their files. And I told them that, yes, I had sent it out. And I told them truthfully that I had sent their files to law enforcement.
What law enforcement agency did you send it to?
The law enforcement agency that I sent it to was the Department of Justice Antitrust Division under Attorney General William Barr.
But according to Zach, Google's attacks on him had only just begun. A Twitter troll outed him as the leaker, saying,
"By the way, Zach, shouldn't you remove well-employed tech geek from your bio, Mr. Leaker?"
So who do you think one snowflake is?
Well, I had my suspicions that it might be an insider from Google, since that information that he posted wasn't public. After I realized that Google knew who I was, I started going to lawyers and attorneys and trying to figure out what Google's likely next step was going to be. And both attorneys that I talked to both said, this is the first step in having your life ruined. They're going to come after you. And so I realized that this is what was coming to me. So what I want to let them know is, look, I've got your data. Yeah. And so what I did is I put out a dead man switch so that in case they were going to either try to destroy my life through the legal system or that they were trying to just, you know, off me because, you know, I'm exposing their a really big thing, how they are tampering with elections. I wanted to let them know that, hey, look, if something were to happen with me, then these documents are going to be released immediately.
And what is a dead man switch for those who aren't familiar with that?
So a dead man switch is something that people that have information about a corporation or somebody else, and they're concerned about their personal safety and possibly their life. And what they do is that they let that entity know that in the case that they get offed, that the information will be released to the public. Mm-hmm. And so I set up a dead man switch to trigger in the case that I was killed or assassinated. And so I let them know that I was willing to do that and to protect myself. The next day, the police began looking for me in two different locations. So Google decided to do a wellness check, and
now are you getting this? Google is in contact with this guy. They know who he is and what he's done, and Google cares so much about the guy. They call the cops so they can go out there and just do a wellness check on this individual. Isn't that warm and cuddly? Doesn't that make you feel good all under?
And from what I've understood from other attorneys is that they're trying to establish that I've got some sort of mental problem in order to make their case easier.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a large way in which they intimidate their employees that go rogue on the company.
San Francisco police confirmed...
By the way, they did arrest him in this wellness check. I just thought they were out there to see if he was okay and upright and breathing. Well, evidently he was, and they just wanted to put the cuffs on him for a while.
Project Veritas that they did indeed receive a, quote, mental health call, unquote, and responded to Zach's address on that day.
Oh, so it was actually Google that said, this guy's nuts, you better go out there and arrest him. Ooh.
Are you worried about your safety?
I was, because, you know, because the documents hadn't been released yet, the value of taking me off the chessboard was really high. And the expense of, you know, taking me down, in which I wasn't well known, was very low. If nobody knows who somebody is, then if they take them off, then it's a conspiracy theory that the real reason was because of some nefarious cause. And so what I realized is that I needed to both increase the expense that Google would take to do something bad, and also reduce the value of that successful operation. And so I decided that the best way to reduce the return on investment was to come public, release all the documents, and get the target off of my back. And so that's what I did, and that's why I'm here today.
Now, this is a confidential document, correct?
Yes.
This is not a document that Google has come out and admitted that this is their process.
That's right. Correct.
And in this document, it says, I'm going to read from it.
In fact, if you brought this up without the document, they would say that this is a conspiracy theory.
Wow.
The internal Google documents from the story given to us by Mr. Voorhees reverberated through the halls of Congress.
In this Project Veritas video, which I did watch last night, they allege that there are internal Google documents, which they put on the video, and this is what it said. For example, imagine that a Google image query for CEOs shows predominantly men. Even if it were a factually accurate representation of the world, it would be algorithmic unfairness.
In some cases, it may be appropriate to take no action if the system accurately affects current reality, while in other cases, it may be desirable to consider how we might help society reach a more fair and equitable state via product intervention.
What does that mean, Mr.
And you thought computer geeks were so smart.
Slater.
What do they mean by that?
So what they want to do is they want to act as gatekeepers between the user and the content that they're trying to access.
So this information about algorithmic fairness was given to Project Veritas by you.
That's correct.
How did you obtain this document?
So these documents were available to every single employee within the company that was full-time. And so as a full-time employee at the company, I just searched for some keywords and these documents started to pop up. And so once I started finding one document, I started finding keywords for other documents, and I would enter that in and continue this cycle until I had a treasure trove, an archive of documents that clearly spelled out the system, what they were intending to do, in very clear language.
So what you're saying is the public's right to know this information has a far greater value than whatever they can do to you personally as a result of you sitting and going on camera talking about it.
That's right. I mean, if I'm just on camera, that's just some dude's opinion. And, you know, who knows what that person's thinking. When they see the documents themselves, they're going to be shocked, they're going to be terrified, and they're going to be like, how can Google so blatantly lie to the American public and lie to Congress?
I'll continue this, but we're running out of time in this hour, the first hour. But you know what was on the media today? Oh, well, 500 Google employees signed a petition to deflect. They got caught with their stinking little knickers down around their knees. They've lied to Congress. They've lied to everybody. And they don't like being caught up until the point of potentially being killed because, well, there's a crazy person out on the loose who stole a bunch of stuff from us. Art off the grid. Hello, Art.
Hey, John. I'm much more composed today than I was last time.
Good, because that could have got you in some serious trouble. Anyhow, go ahead.
Yeah, I was having a rough week, man. Yeah. I'll tell you what.
I can tell.
But this week's been pretty good. I've not done too bad this week. I've managed to maintain and be a good boy.
Okay.
Anyway, I was wondering, you know, this whole transgender thing, I know you were kind of like on that Israel thing, and I think that's just absolutely hilarious. But on this transgender thing, there was something that just came out recently in the news a few days ago, and it's posted on my page on Facebook. But I didn't know if you had seen this or covered it, but there's two cases. Now, the first one comes from an area known as Dunfermline, Scotland. Now, this was someone by the name of Dolatowski who basically molested a 12-year-old girl in the ladies' room. Now, what makes this so unique is this is someone who identifies as a transgender female.
So it's actually a male that says it's a. So it's actually a male parading around as a female, but yet wanted to molest a 12-year-old girl.
Oh, but there's more.
Okay, hang on to that thought. We'll be back. I want to finish this up. This is kind of taking me off the topic, but I'll deal with it. Second hour of the National Intel Report coming up, and we'll cover more on this Project Veritas. You know, what is the somebody needs to call the FBI. I want to check the integrity of this terrorist group. Project Veritas. How dare they? Truth to the public? Truth be damned. Except here, folks, because you people can handle the truth.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.